Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to yet another exciting episode of the Vinnie Eastwood Show, now broadcasting on American Freedom Radio, virtually commercial-free. We had a conversation with James Corbett of the Corbett Report about the peer-to-peer economy and how advertising is, I wouldn't want to disparage it or the people that use it, but in terms of being a listener to talk radio, you're not listening to it because you want to hear the ads. You're listening to it because you want to hear the people talk. So we've released the new format now where we have one break at the end of every hour. So that gives you straight 55 minutes or so of unfettered, wonderful talk radio every hour. That's quite a high percentage, if I've done the maths correctly. My very special guest is Zen Gardner. Zen, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Vinny. Great to be back, man.
It's been a while, man. How have you been?
Really good. You know, last time we were together was at 2012 when the world was supposed to reset and everything was going to blow up. Remember, the show was right over the timeline.
Yeah. I spoke with Alfred Weber about that, and he says that, oh, now we're on a new positive timeline, and the whole scumbaggery thing is just kind of like, I don't know. Something tells me it's sort of like Hot Tub Time Machine 2. You know? Time's running out for everybody.
You were there over the international timeline saying, it's okay here. Nothing's happened.
It was quite funny.
I can assure you guys, when the time changes, it's going to be all right.
Well, I think on the 21st of 2012, I had a bunch of people around in my house. We watched the movie 2012 on the night, you know, just for fun, you know. And then we were like outside, okay, it's nearly midnight now. It's going to be 2012. And then we, boom, it hits at night. Nothing happens. And a guy's still sitting there watching his watch. And he's like, oh, okay, but what if there's like a minute or two that's different on the timeline? It's just like, bro, nothing's going to freaking happen. And nothing has, apart from the same thing that's been happening the whole freaking way up until 2012, which is everything's getting worse.
Well, the whole message of the Mayans was that, you know, things are recycling, so and it's evolving better vibrationally, and this, the rest of this is just debris falling away, which I think is a pretty cool concept.
Could you explain?
Shaking and rattling. Well, they're shaking and rattling all their noise and fear machines and idiocy, trying to you know, scare everybody to death. And I was just on another show earlier today and was talking about how, you know, you remember back 2010, 2011, it looked like the economy was going to completely collapse. One of the pillars was going to fall out and the whole thing was going to go to the crapper. And it didn't happen. And successively, things that were supposed to happen seem to have been delayed and pushed back. And I think it has everything to do with what's happening with people waking up and the information sharing and this, you know, dynamism that's happening amongst awakening people. I think it's really pushing back their agenda. It's got them running. Right after Boston bombing and the whole thing was dissolved and analyzed and exposed, you know, each successive scam like ISIS and you know, all this idiocy going on in the Middle East, it's being exposed as it happens. It's turning into almost an immediate exposure. You know, it's not to everybody. There's the masses that are falling for all the BS, but there's a really cool dynamic going on, which I think is actually delaying what they would otherwise like to have already transpired, you know, collapsing a lot of stuff and bringing on the full-on New World Order. Obviously, the agenda is still afoot, and they're trying everything they can. But I think there's some cool dynamics going on, and it has something to do with that this sort of reset, this idea of civilization going through a recycling period, and not to minimize the dangers we're in. I mean, this is a very serious time. There's psychopaths with their fingers on all kinds of buttons that they could execute any time. But it seems to keep getting pushed back a little more, a little more. Their agenda was to have everything, you know, all in place by the year 2000, according to a lot of those previous documents. And, you know, then, you know, you read they pushed it back. So anyway, just an interesting dynamic to keep an eye on, because I think it has a lot to do with what people are noticing, what people are waking up to, and this incredible network of awakened people.
I've likened it to detoxing the body. You know how you're trying to give up the smoking, you're trying to stop the alcohol, you're trying to stop all the sugary stuff and then get some really good things in, you know, fruits, vegetables, vitamins, minerals, that sort of thing. And then you realize very quickly that you don't feel okay anymore. You feel terrible. You feel absolutely horrific as all your pimples start breaking out. And more or less, it's your body going through a really, really painful repair process. And I think that's kind of, in a very general way, what the entirety of the planet and civilization is going through at the moment.
Yeah, that, I think that's a perfect analogy. My wife's a tremendous researcher, and we've been looking into dog health and learning a lot of new things about how to treat animals and feed them, and you know, relearning a lot of things. And one website was really interesting. It said something right along those lines, that this woman was treating a stray dog that was extremely sick. And she puts it through a regimen of, you know, natural remedies and healthy foods. And what happens is the dog seems to get sicker and sicker. And she has to tell this to her clients of dogs that she treats. It gets sicker and sicker and sicker. But she noticed, like with one dog, it looked like it had cataracts. And all of a sudden, this white pus was coming out of the eyes. And the eyes were fine afterwards. And, you know, the skin got worse, but then it got better. And what she ultimately came up with is that the root cause was the very last thing to be treated by the treatment. The real underlying cause, in the case of this dog, it was the gut. It was inside of the alimentary canal, which, you know, many natural health people will point to. It's inside of the gut, gut health that really gives you your essential health. But the essential root cause was the last thing that got treated through the treatment, but the detox and all these terrible symptoms came first, and just what you're saying. So it was really interesting, and it really is the perfect analogy, I think.
Well, you know, I think, what was it? I think it was Schwarzenegger who said, you know, there's no pain, no gain. It just has been going on for so long, and it's a war of attrition. And I think the only victory that you can really have in a war of attrition is to survive it. And I'm just kind of been sitting back here, and I've got, you know, only just enough food to eat. I've only just got enough money to pay my rent and keep the operation going. And it's kind of stressful not having any future support kind of thing. Like, from one day to the next, it's dancing on a razor's edge. And I was just thinking, man, and I think I've got stuff to complain about. There's people out there being killed by drone strikes and stuff like that while they're playing soccer.
Yeah. So true. It's a shocking situation. It's funny. I live down in Uruguay in southern South America, and a lot of people are coming here from the States, from Europe, Australia, the East Bloc countries, and really beautiful, interesting people for various reasons, just sort of coming together. There's a beautiful community forming. People living off-grid, building earth bag homes, and it's all spontaneous, but it's just a little microcosm of what's going on around the world. But so many are living, like you're saying, apparently hand to mouth. You know, they're just getting by, trying to find a new way to support themselves. And it's not easy, but it seems to be some kind of a, you know, spiritual technology that keeps us, you know, I don't know, down to earth, in tune, prepared, more realistic about life. I'm not sure, because it's the same with us. You know, we just get by, and, you know, we don't worry about it. And thankfully, I've got some very sweet and generous supporters that through the website, and you know, a few things here and there that keep us going. But there are so many who are in that situation that are, you know, beautiful people trying to do the right thing, and it's that kind of a battle is not a fun one. You know, it's not an easy one. you know, that concern. I've got a few friends in Spain that are, you know, fabulous researchers. They speak at conferences. They do amazing, write books, all kinds of things. But, you know, it just comes in a trickle, and they just barely get by. Some of them are raising kids still, and I think ours are grown. But it's something about that dynamic that apparently is keeping a lot of us on track in a way that we don't quite recognize just yet. But, you know, we have to trust that, you know, while we really do need to, you know, have support and not be worried about it, we have to trust that our situations are, you know, in some aspect designed and always, you know, beneficial. Just to keep, you know, to keep the bright side on. But it's a fight, man. It's a fight for so many of us.
Well, it's against anxiety, I found. Like, if I don't worry about money, even though I've got none, by the time I have to pay a bill or something like that, the money turns up, like, right on that day or something around that region. But if I do worry about it, the money turns up on that day just exactly right when I need it. So it doesn't make a difference whether I worry or not. It seems to work regardless. And I don't know, I'm starting to believe that it's because I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing, and the universe has a way of just sort of helping you along when you are in a pretty unsure situation.
Yeah. And, you know, the wealthy are in a situation that they can't recognize anything, any kind of a spiritual dynamic. And theirs is built on, you know, amassing, you know, via greed and, you know, being entranced by having so much. They can't see that dynamic anymore. They lose touch. The most unhappy people in the world are the super wealthy. That's why they try to fill the vacuum with stuff and, you know, extreme experiences and living off the pain of others, because they don't have happiness. They've lost touch. And there's something to it. You know, it's not that being poor is an aspect of, you know, spirituality or virtue or anything, but there's we just have to see the dynamic and what how it works and work with it somehow. But what you're saying is beautiful, you know, and I've heard that from so many people that it just shows up, and you have to stay generous at the same time. There's a need in front of you. Send the $50, you know, help this person. You can't stop giving even though you don't have very much. And like you said, it just shows up. Afterwards, it's like, you know, I've heard two stories the last 2 days of amazing things that happened to people that, you know, somebody was in need and they're close to their last few bucks and they shared it. And all of a sudden somebody turned around. And I think today it was somebody who teaches a yoga course to stay afloat with their kids, and some wealthy Japanese lady taking the course said, "Listen, this is worth a lot more than what you're charging," and gave her a big hunk of money. She says, I'm going to pay for what this is worth to me. And it was exactly what they needed right then. You know, it's just we would never notice these miracles if we weren't in a place of need and humility, you know, and I think that's a beautiful dynamic.
Yeah, well, a story I like to tell is the one time I got up in the morning, I think this was back in 2012, in fact, and, you know, when you get up on bill day and you go to your computer and on your way from the bedroom, you're thinking, okay, I've got this bit to pay, I got my rent, I got the power, I got the water, I got the internet. That's $500. I don't have $500. Yeah. So I go in and check my PayPal, and there's $500 from one guy.
Wow, beautiful.
You know?
Beautiful.
So we're not talking about something... wait, maybe we are talking about something mystical here. Maybe we're talking about the ability to draw sometimes. I mean, I don't know what it is. It's intention, maybe. That quantum physics belief that you can imagine what it is you really want to see, and then you can sort of manifest it. Like, but you're not the one actually really manifesting it. It's something else. You're merely putting the intention into it, and that something else reacts and gives it back. Like the slit experiment.
Yeah. Like what?
The slit experiment.
Oh, right. Things appearing, happening at the same place in two places. I mean, same thing in two places. It's so true. It's a dynamic. There's something very cool about it. You know, I think last time we talked, you shared a very similar experience. Somehow we were talking about something that happened to you, and there was, I think it was $1,000 involved. And I don't know, I vaguely remember you were telling me something very similar that had just happened to you that blew your mind.
Oh, that's nothing, bro. Like, I think in the last 30 days of last year and the first 60 days of this year, I was handed collectively about maybe 10,000 by three people.
Wow. Wonderful.
That allowed me to get a new camera and a new computer. And it's like, I was wondering what I'm going to do with my time, because you're talking about generosity here. Now, I've got nothing to give. Like, and I'm a very, very stingy guy. Like, anybody who knows me, if I've got it, I'll give it to you, but I usually don't have much, and I don't like to share all of it. but what was it happening? I have generosity in my time and my skills, which are actually quite mm-hmm. valuable. So if somebody were to pay me mm-hmm. To, for example, do video editing, they'd have to pay me maybe $50 to $250 an hour, because I'm very, very quick and when I'm really putting the effort in, I can make a freaking awesome looking video that's incredibly entertaining. However, I do it for free for people who need it done for them, don't have the skills, and don't have the technology, don't have the gear. And there will be occasions where I don't have the gear, right? And then I ask mm-hmm. the people, give me some money so I can get this piece of equipment. And they do. Every single time. I think for the last 5 years I've been doing this radio show. Every time I've needed a new piece of equipment, I've never, ever had to pay for it myself.
That's beautiful. That's very much James's peer-to-peer economy model. You know, it's based on need and giving what you have to give, and others giving you know, the energy they have to give to make the model work. And I don't know. I don't know how we got on this whole subject, but it's a really cool dynamic. So a lot of people, you know, once you find the truth and you step out and you realize you want to disengage from, you know, the matrix, whatever you want to call it, and get out of its clutches, survival is an issue. You know, how are you going to support yourself, pay your bills? You know, what kind of a situation are you in? How many kids do you have, if any? What's your housing situation? Where is it? Do you want to change where you live? And what are you going to do when you get there to a new location? And these are very, very real issues that people have to face, because the wake-ups, it's hitting people broadside. And they know they have to respond. And stepping out there, they're going to wonder, well, how am I going to pay the bills? It's amazing. Where I'm living, there's a family that moved off the grid, a local Uruguayan family. The guy was a pharmacist in the capital city of Montevideo, and I'm outside the city. And he decided, I'm out of here. He didn't like the rat race. He brought his family out 10 years ago. He went up this beautiful local hill and just claimed a piece of land and built a house. He collects rainwater. He's got a bicycle that runs his washing machine. He's got a bicycle that runs his blender. He has a little business because he's an herbalist, so he actually collects the herbs off the land, and he sells tinctures and natural remedies at a local market to get by. Beautiful man. He's got the most natural, beautiful, radiant children I've ever seen. They have one little light bulb that they have, an 8x8 solar panel to power in their house at nighttime, a spectacular view, and they're making it work. And I was just blown away. I saw them about a month and a half ago. I got to meet them and two of their property. They got their own natural, you know, vegetables going. And it's you know, people are doing it. They do. I've had it. I'm out of here. And they're making ends meet. And then he had all they have. They live really remote. They had a little moped, you know, a little scooter to get around on and get supplies up and down the mountain. And somebody stole it. So some friends of ours decided to have a get-together, and they're musicians, and they had a party, put on music. They said, we're going to have a fundraiser to help this family get another scooter. And 200 people showed up, all brought food, did all the cooking, did all the cleaning, not only brought enough money to buy a new scooter, but somebody actually brought a scooter for them on top of it. And it was just, you know, this natural get-together. It was just mind-blowing. And, you know, that's the kind of spontaneous society that we can have potentially anywhere, everywhere.
It's
and that everybody's longing for.
It's the vibe, man. All right? Like a real drunk student one time gave me this amazing piece of advice in a bar. He said, life is about one thing and one thing only, the search for good vibes. You know, vibes means vibrations. Mm-hmm. And when you feel hate, you give off vibrations. When you feel love, you give off vibrations. One's bad vibrations and one's good. And I think it's sort of like what they say in the Celestine prophecies about we're all creating energy. Some of us are trying to suck it away from others, but some of us are actually creating it. And when they've got two people in a room that are both creating energy and they're sending that energy into the conversation.
Anyway, if you can still hear me, we were talking about the spontaneity factor of, you know, how powerful love is and people responding to each other. And like you said, the good vibe. And that's the whole thing. It's all about vibration. It really is. Like, it has to do with the whole awakening that's going on, that this vibrational change. That might sound spooky and new age to some people, but it's not. It's a very real factor going on. And I'm very, very excited about it. And we're seeing the manifestations all around us. But that's where it's at. It's all about the awakening and people responding to it. And it's really walking without using eyesight, it's using heart sight. That's the real issue going on. That, you know, following those vibes like you brought up, it's a pretty exciting dynamic that's going on. And people are seeing it manifested in so many ways. It's not, there's a lot of cynicism about it. They say, well, you know, we'll just go down to the local mall and you're going to see how many people are, you know, as dead as a tailpipe. You know, it's sure, there's the throngs of people who seem to have not gotten it. But even amongst them, I think people would be very surprised if you talk to people individually who is actually waking up and starting to get it to some extent. And I think people would be surprised. And as it continues to collapse, the more and more are going to get it. My wife is waving. Okay, thanks. I can't hear anything. This is so weird, even without the headphones plugged in. Anyway, that's what it's all about. I had a really interesting talk today on another show, and I was sharing how a really amazing paradigm indicator to me is this the CERN activation that's going on. You know, they're looking for the dark particle, and they're looking for the dark matter, and they're looking for the black holes, and you know, while the rest of us are looking for light, empowerment, love, connectivity, you know, it's so diametrically opposed, that the two paradigms. And I thought that was an interesting analogy, as the these psychopaths keep drilling for more occult power and, you know, channeling their dark energies. I mean, they even admitted that they're not sure what's going to come out of this thing when they get this machine fully cranked up, which is a pretty incredible thing for a scientist to say. But with us, meanwhile, with the awakening people, we're channeling into areas of greater light, greater communication, greater awareness. They're so diametrically opposed, and one does not really affect the other. So as we witness this thing crumbling to one side, and it affects all of us as these idiots, you know, continue their destructive path. That's one side of it. But on the other side, there's this incredible empowerment. I mean, what's happening in local communities is quite remarkable. In England, in particular, they're right now having this. They're rising up against fracking, and these are middle class communities. These aren't alternative, you know, activist oriented, you know, bloggers and you know, what people would normally think of as activists. These are people who are just plain concerned citizens, you know, responding from the heart and trying to protect their families. And that's how it happening regarding GMOs. It's happening regarding, you know, the placement of these smart meters, cell towers, you know, that whole aspect, you know, people concerned about radiation, people are rising up. And if it takes this kind of pressure to bring people out, well, I guess so be it. You know, if people were too complacent and really weren't getting it, well, let's count this as just the way the universe works, you know. That's how people, if you need, you know, a little kicking to get out of bed, well, so be it. You know, some people might wake up naturally and not be on a good sleep cycle. Others might need a little earthquake to shake them out of bed. But awaken we will, one way or the other. I'm very encouraged. I see the answer, just in general things that I'm really into lately, is the transition from all this information and this sort of insular aspect of the alternative community to moving it into the next level, reaching a wider audience and taking it to a place of activation that's not just, you know, storming the streets and screaming at things, but more communicating with each other, getting in touch with each other, meeting each other physically, you know, not just going by blind, you know, fake names on the forums, but
I'm back.
Really getting together. Hey,
sorry about that.
There you are. Was that you or me?
That was totally me, bro. have you been hosting in my absence? Have you? If so, thank you very much.
I'm waffling away. Am I well? I'm just waffling away here, trying to fill it.
This guy.
My wife said, "Keep talking. I can hear it."
This guy is effing professional, brother. Oh, yeah. Well, it's just I had this old modem, and it's been being a bit wenchy for a while. But I've got a new one that just got delivered, so I had to whip the cords out and plug it in and wait for it to load up, and it didn't even need any programming. So here we are, we're back again. Sorry for the technical difficulties, ladies and gentlemen. It's it's not my fault, but it totally is. Because I hadn't swapped around the modems before the show. Like, dumbass. Right, so how long was I gone for? Like 10, 15 minutes, 20 minutes, or whatever. But where we left is the Celestine prophecies. About have you read the book or seen the movie?
I've studied about it, but I haven't read the whole book nor seen the movie.
All right. Well, basically, like, there's a layer of reality on top or underneath or within our layer, kind of like a signal embedded in the code. And what it does is, like, let's say you're a good person, I'm a good person, and we both give off good vibes. Now, good vibes don't just go directly from me to you and then directly from you back to me. What they do is they kind of meet in the middle, sort of like, like two people launching an energy beam, fireball or something like that, and they meet in the middle and they sort of like go back and forth, that kind of thing. But instead of it being competing, it accumulates energy, positive energy. So you'll find sometimes, and I think everybody's had this experience, where you've having a conversation with somebody who kind of clicks with you, you know, they're on the same wavelength, and you you feel better and better as the conversation goes, and that's because you're both contributing energy to the conversation. Whereas we've all had the opposite experience, where you're feeling really, really good, and then you start talking to somebody, and they suck your energy out of you like bone marrow through a straw. Just, you know, it's gone.
Yeah.
Energy vampires, bro. Oh my god. Yeah. And those are the kind of people that wind up in the government.
So they can siphon off as many people as possible.
Yeah,
group siphon.
That's the name of the game. You know, there's no.
It's funny. Anybody, we were talking about leadership today. It's like anybody, and you know, I was talking while you were remodeming about, you know, about what I've been learning about, or what my drive to see more, not just activism, but reaching a wider audience and people having more personal communication, getting together on a local level, and you know, taking it to the next level, get outside of the insular model of this alternative mindset, and just blogging and shouting back and forth at each other. And I forgot what I was going to say, but
that was awesome.
I was just trying to retrace my thoughts and got myself caught in a corner. Must be your old modem hitting me.
No. Actually, I'm trying to turn off the wireless on it now because it's like I can. Hey, in fact, ever since I had Paul Waddell from safespace.net.nz come round to my house and show me with his devices that the Bluetooth on my computer and the wireless is pumping out like 15,000 microwatts. Recommended microwatt exposure is like 2, maybe 1, but the legal allowed limit is 1,000,000.
You're still in the safe zone, son.
Yeah, yeah. I was just like so freaking paranoid about it, man. So now whenever anybody's got like their Mac or something like that, Mac are evil in that respect, man. They've always got the Bluetooth automatically turned on, and you have to like go and adjust a setting in order to get rid of it. It's like, do I want 15,000 microwatts today? No, I think I'll use a wired mouse and keyboard instead then. That'll be very nice. But it's not like you're getting 15,000 just from, you know, all together. It's actually from each individual source on top of each other, a cumulative effect. it's quite a nasty one. And people don't realize that they're surrounded almost at all times by some kind of poison emitter or some kind of environmental degrading sort of thing, right. You know? And if you're watching TV, I mean, that's just degrading in general.
Yeah, exactly. On top of everything else, now the TV's watching you. Well, actually, I'm sure it has been for a long time.
Yeah,
monitoring your expressions, and you know, supposedly in the guise of this is for marketing. We just want to learn about what you like and don't like. We're just trying to help you here.
How can anybody think that marketing is benign? Like, really?
Yeah, I like Bill Hicks' routine on that. You've seen that?
Yeah,
marketer,
kill yourself.
You into marketing? Kill yourself. No, seriously. Kill yourself.
Now back to the show.
You know, I know you think I'm kidding, but, you know, suck a tailpipe. Get a gun from a Yank friend. I could almost recite it.
You are Satan's little helpers. Kill yourself. Yeah. Kill yourself. Kill yourself now. Now back to the show. Hey, and that's great.
The marketing guy says, hey, that's really smart. He's going after the angry crowd. He's going for the indignant dollar.
Hey, no, Bill's really smart. He's going for that angry marketing dollar. That anti-marketing dollar. That's a good market. you scumbags, please don't turn everything into a dollar sign. Please. Ooh, the plea for sanity dollar. Huge, huge market.
Well done. Just terrific.
I haven't listened to that routine since I was like 19.
You got it. Your memory chips are still good, man.
Oh, man. I memorized it hardcore, because it's like, I think it was, what did I get introduced to at the same time by the same guy? He introduced me to Weed, Bill Hicks, and The Truth and Lies of 9/11 by Michael Rupert from thewilderness.com. And that he doesn't know. And he's not my friend anymore because he was. Yeah, I'm not gonna disparage him, but he doesn't know just what a monster he inadvertently created. He's just like, hey, try this, try that, try that, and then just boom, it becomes like my life's work virtue. I've become a cannabis activist for a number of years and have like tens and tens of thousands of hits of protests and big public smoke-ups and all of this kind of thing. I'm like the number one alternative radio show in New Zealand for conspiracy stuff, also the number one subscribed YouTube channel in New Zealand for news in general. Like, no other news channel in New Zealand has more subscribers than I do, and we're talking including the mainstream media ones.
Wow. So cool. I wrote an article called Mind Sweeping for Truthers about that very thing. You never know who you're talking to. When you're sharing a little bit of information, you're sharing an email, you're sharing an article, you know, you tap somebody's shoulder and talk to them in the queue somewhere or in a store, and that person might just take that information and do what happened to you. Just absolutely blow, like an atomic spiritual explosion, you know, that I got it now and I am on my way. But it took that little seed of truth. Yeah. I got a letter just yesterday from a kid that I talked to back in Dallas when I lived there. And we've been down here a couple of years now. But, you know, I talk to people wherever I go. And he was in a store and we started chatting. And he had a fascinating story because the guy he worked with, his mom actually worked in the, what's the name of that atomic facility? L?
I don't know.
Something similar. The one in New Mexico. Anyway, she worked underground in an actual one of those, you know, big super bunkers. And she said that they'd been preparing for an EMP attack, that there was a big threat from China at the time. And she actually sent her son a pre-1964 car that didn't have an electronic system so he could escape Dallas if the EMP attack ever happened and get out. She said, you have 1 hour before everything turns to hell. And I just want to make sure you... And she'd been in this program for over 30 years. This is no small lady. She'd quite a heavy duty. Anyway, the kid and I were talking. He told me that, and I started filling in some other stuff, and I told him about my website, and we made friends. We had lunch another day. He just wrote me, and now he's like a chemtrail activist in Dallas. The kid, he said, I got it. He said, since you left, he says, I woke up. I'm on it. I'm doing what I can. You know, the kid, and he was, you know, a sweet kid. He got a few things, but it clicked. It finally clicked with him, and he took off. And we just never know who we're talking to, you know. But had that conversation not happened, I don't know what would have happened. Had people not sent me the information that I got that got me turned on, or like the information you got, who knows? You know, perhaps we would have woken up anyway. Perhaps we wouldn't. But somebody was, you know, faithful enough to deliver the message and respond to the call.
Well, I think this actually brings me to a very, very important discussion is about the truth movement in general and our proclivity to only talk to those who are already converted or already on the level. Namely because if you're going around all the time, and I found this during, many years ago when I was doing sales, telemarketing, if you're going around all the time trying to sell stuff to people, whether that be an idea, whether or not they're paying for it, whether or not it's free, rejection becomes part of the game. And rejection is very hard to deal with for a lot of people. And so they almost adopt a feeling of permanent rejection, of assumed rejection. And it's funny because in marketing, the more you assume you're going to fail, the more likely you're going to fail. You know, people need to just have a bit more faith in humanity. Oh, these are sheeple. They're never going to wake up. Really? Are you telling me that you never believed a single lie the government told you? You never voted once thinking it would change something. You never said, I understand, to a cop. And you know, dude, you weren't born a freaking omnipotent god. All right. Nobody else is. You don't have the ability to predict every single thing. I mean, my goodness, you have any idea how many random interactions I've had with people at parties over the years and told them some real mind-blowing stuff, and I have no idea, never seen them since. Who knows? They could be, like, exposing some scumbaggery right as we speak.
Exactly, man. And also the presumption that we tend to have as judgmental humans to look at somebody and judge them by their looks or judge by previous, you know, interactions or previous reactions to things we'd said. And you look at some kind of matronly looking, you know, middle-aged lady and you go, oh, you know, this, I mean, come on, this, you know. But anyway, I'll mention something. And all of a sudden, you know, the woman opens up and says, this happened to us. Oh, here's another example. We were in San Diego and there's a lady. We went to a store. We're looking for something for flooring. And, you know, she was one of those matronly-looking, middle-aged, you know, system-looking ladies. And she lost her husband due to going back and forth from Vietnam, getting 25 anthrax vaccinations, which completely destroyed his health, and he just decayed. And she was so upset, and she became an activist in that area. But as a result, she woke up to everything. And you would never... never in your lifetime imagined that this woman was as hot on the trail as she was just looking at her and, you know, having a cursory glance or a shallow conversation. But it came up, you know, I don't know how it came up, but something came up in the conversation about, I mean, I'm always talking about pointing out chemtrails or something, but, and there's beautiful people that you have no idea. I remember I was in a Whole Foods and I was talking to the, I always drop little hints, you know, say, yeah, well, but you know, something that everybody agrees on, you know, the banking scam or something about the government, and you can check by their response, then you can push it a little further and just see how deep it goes with the person. And I was talking to the checkout lady and she was going, really? And I think at the time the Occupy movements were going on. And the next woman in line, straight looking lady, you know, all of a sudden, and I was trying to explain it and she piped up and said, oh yes, there's an Occupy meeting tomorrow, 5 o'clock. It's down at the so-and-so, you know, and she just jumped right in, filled in the gaps for the woman because she wanted to get involved, you know, do something. Totally startled me. And it's that prejudging attitude that really kills us. It kills action. I mean, people silence themselves. They censor themselves more than anybody else does by going by old paradigms of how we talk to each other, what's expected. You know, like people, you know how it is going up in an elevator. I'm sure you're the same as me. I like to, you know, say something stupid or crack a joke or turn to somebody and say, you know, how come everybody, you know, you don't say something about the atmosphere, but get people talking in the elevator, you know, break the horrific oppression.
You would not fit in well in Japan, bro. Anybody even seen footage of like Japanese trains and everything? It's like there's a million people on a train and it's dead silent. Like literally. Like seriously, people haven't talked to each other since 1973.
Oh my god, that's so sad. So sad.
Well, it's different. It's just a different culture or whatever. Because I don't know. Maybe us white people are just far more open and outgoing because we're used to freedom and not knowing anything about our culture and whatnot. I don't know.
No, I don't. I don't accept that because human nature is fundamentally when it's free, it's giving, it's loving. Why do you think the Japanese go out and get hammered every night out of their minds, and they have karaoke? You know, they go, you know, they sing to stuff stoned out of their brains just to get out of themselves. Look at the example of the British. Why are they so good at drama? The repressed society over the years, this strict society, their release was humor and drama, and that's why their humor is so fantastic and so sly and so clever, because it was breaking past these containment mechanisms. I think that human nature is naturally giving. Look at a mother with their children; they don't play it cool. They're, you know, a healthy relationship is affectionate, it's cuddling, it's warm, it's giving, and but it's society. These mores, whatever they are, these imposing containment systems, I think that really makes it abnormal. I really think there is a standard. It's like morality. Like, you know, some people say there is no such thing as good and bad, which is like that's the Illuminist, the Illuminati type mindset. There is no good and bad. So you can abuse children, you can do what you want. You know, we're our own God and all that kind of stuff in the wrong sense. But there are underlying signals of a true conscious human spirit, you know, like to do no harm, to be caring, to, you know, to not inflict pain, you know, to avoid being dishonest, things like that. It's a fundamental signal, and there's codes within humanity have been written according to those things for generations. But On top of those came this other stuff, and it got really weird. And you know, so anyway, our natural state is a loving one.
Well, I think our natural state is actually a small community, really, because in a city you have anonymity, and anonymity is one of the things that you force upon your troops and what have you. You get them all into wearing a uniform or all wearing those black ski masks and things like that when they send the troops out on the streets of America, which they call police apparently they're soldiers now. And because these police are non-identifiable, lots of them aren't even wearing badge numbers or whatever. Even in Occupy Auckland, they illegally evicted the protesters, and we saw a number of cops wearing the exact same identity badge, right?
Wow.
You know, it, like really corrupt, really dodgy sort of stuff. And when you have that anonymity, you it's almost like it's very difficult to be held accountable for things. And so you don't necessarily have to modify your behavior. It becomes a modicum of choice. While at the same time, when you're talking about small communities, I mean, the joke is, oh, everybody knows everything in everybody in this town. So who's going to try and, you know, get away with like stealing your car or something when they know who you are and they know that you know who they are, you know?
Yeah. Really, really good point. Like, yeah, come on, Johnny, take off the mask. We know who you are. Come on, that uniform's too big for you, and put down the billy club. Come on, you know, your dad's going to beat the crap out of you when you get home. Stop acting like you saw on television. Stop chasing kids down the street. You're a cop. You're supposed to be helping people. Get off it, you know.
It's ironic.
It is. It's like those grandmothers who were trying to talk to the, I don't know where it was. It wasn't Ukraine. But there was a protest, and the grandmothers went down there. They just started talking to the boys, you know, like they're their sons or grandkids. And, they held up mirrors. You remember that?
Yeah, that was one of the tactics. Yeah,
it was, and I thought that was very touching. Like, come on, kids, remember your humanity.
Well, it's not like the cops will just look at their reflection and go, oh, my God, I look dashing.
I need a new visor. This one's a little foggy.
Yeah. Have you got one with, like, kind of reflective panels so that they can't see my eyes through the visor so I can stare at all the girls? Why, yes. Yes, we do.
How come the captain's got Ray-Bans and I've only got these cheap Chinese sunglasses? This isn't fair.
Is there some kind of elitism going on with police, do you reckon? And it's like my billy club's bigger than yours?
Oh, sure. That's always part of it.
Look at the size of my billy club.
You think, they think about it. Underneath, these are people who have, you know, in most cases, wives and families and a life to lead. They go home to something, and they're being groomed into this inhuman force. You know, obviously there's psychotropic drugs involved, and I read years ago that they've been using a lot of steroids as well, which might explain the craving for donuts. I don't know, but it's really sad. These are people. They're people underneath these things. And they're like you said, they're put in this anonymity of a uniform, which is just, it's degrading.
It's de-individuating. That's what it is. Yeah. I no longer see myself as an individual person with my own mind, my own thoughts, my own heart, my own morality. I am part of a group, and virtually I don't exist. I only exist for the group. And that way you can get people to abandon their morality, abandon their individuality, abandon their families, abandon their country, and abandon everything that matters because, we're part of a group now.
Yeah, well said.
Something like, I forget who told me this, it was a while ago, I might be misremembering, but every time somebody has killed a New Zealand police officer, the killer has not survived longer than 18 months.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's kind of like killing a mafioso or a gang member or something like that. You're likely to get a reprisal, except you're talking about a gang mafia who control the justice system. It's like, that's not a good idea, bro. They're kind of dangerous, and everybody knows this, and this is why Grand Theft Auto is so freaking popular. Everybody... gets paranoid when a cop drives past them. Paranoid as hell. They get afraid because they know that they're not being driven past by somebody who's there to protect them. All right?
Yeah.
The jig is up. Cops are not there to protect you. They're not there to help you. They're not there to be good and loving, caring members of the community. That is the general impression that people now have. And as a result, this is making the life for good police officers so much harder because the good ones aren't even trusted anymore because the bad guys have messed it up. Kind of like how ecstasy got made illegal because a bunch of idiots who should have been killed anyway through natural selection, of course we don't have that anymore, took way too many ecstasy tablets in a night and died, and they ruined it for the rest of everybody else.
Well, it's kind of like welcome to how blacks in America have felt forever. You know, when they see a cop, they know the odds against them are 1,000 to 1. And if they even look at the cop wrong, they could get, you know, smacked up or chased down or something. It's living in that kind of a tyrannical environment of fear. That's what, and the very poor of many, you know, very really extremely oppressive nations have felt this way for ages, and it's really sad. But
indeed,
not everybody's getting a taste.
Well, we're coming to break now, Zen. This is the end of the first hour. Do you like having no ad breaks? I really did, actually. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen, after the break at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. Donate today. And welcome back to hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. And incidentally, the VinnieEastwoodShow.com, you can listen live on the little player there. That's Vinnie with a Y, because it's the most important question, and Eastwood as in go ahead, make my news. We like to have a little bit of fun on this show. I mean, I like to say just because we're being exterminated doesn't mean we can't make it fun. Otherwise, what's the point of being killed? And my very special guest is Zen Gardner. Welcome back. my unofficial co-host.
Yeah, I'd be interested to hear back how that sounded. I was just talking to thin air.
But I was interested too.
These little messages kept, keep talking. So it's filling the air. What happened to Vinny? So funny you changed the mode in mid-show. That has to be a first. Hey, that song. The guy says he's all by himself. No, he isn't. He feels like it, though.
Yeah, you often do feel like it. Especially when you're at the end of the show and you've got to edit all this stuff and you've got to upload everything to the archives and post it up on Facebook and blah, 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 blah. It's sort of a team effort to a degree. Like, you get a guest and you've got a network running, so you're not entirely alone. But sometimes when it comes down to just doing the work and getting it published and everything, it does come down to one person at the end of the day. But never underestimate what one person can do by themselves if they're determined and dedicated.
That's right. And if you want something done, ask a busy man to do it, they say. I don't think people who comment and observe and watch and you know, it's wonderful that they, you know, absorb the information, but unless somebody actually runs a website or a radio show or does videos themselves, they have no idea how much work goes into making a production and all the research and the technical maintenance. And but it's a labor of love, as you know. It's the same with me. I've been going at this full steam for 8 years without a break, and I don't want to do anything else. I can't help it. I'm compelled, like you are.
Mm.
We have to fulfill our place. And you know, you feel this urgency, yet a wonderful peace. But that's something that people, you know, will experience as they step out themselves and become more active. That the peace of entering in and translating what they're learning into their lives, and making it happen, and helping it happen in other people's lives. And I think that's the hunger of every, you know, living human soul. It's like a mother and their child. You know, they live for their children and to provide for them, and they'd run in front of a bus for them to protect them, or into a burning house to save their lives. And that kind of passion is what makes life so wonderful. Mm-hmm. But unfortunately, it's getting channeled now. Was talking on another show about the Illuminati driven music scene. And there's one of the listeners had just attended some Coachella, I think it was called the Coachella concert or something in Southern California, and they were just shocked that it was all, you know, occult symbolism and whacked out, you know, Lady Gaga type stuff, and the kids were screaming and chanting and just completely hypno robotic into this whole cult of this new kind of you know, programming music. And it's so foreign to me because I avoid it like the plague, except to see, you know, what people have written about it and some synopses about it. But people are into it, and it's really sad. But they're using that as their expression of passion instead of the healthy one, instead of the, what's really inside of them that's been squashed by by the social engineers and diverted into these really perverted. Sounds like a George Harrison song. been pivoted to. It's sad because that passion's in people, and if it doesn't get channeled the right way, it's going to come out the wrong way, and yeah. People are going to get self destructive and destructive of others.
I see so much of that there. In this movement, man. Like, what was it yesterday? I hit up on Facebook. Today is like a milestone. For the first time in 8 years, I checked the comments on my YouTube channel and was surprised to see that every single comment was reasonable, well thought out, and made sense. I was like, what? like in this business, if people who don't have radio shows, don't make videos, don't write books, don't blog, don't have websites, are not calling you a shill and making all sorts of accusation based on hearsay and zero documented evidence, then you're probably doing something wrong.
I'm really blessed on my site that people, I don't know, it's gathered a really nice vibe, and the people, it's sort of the vibration's so positive and creative and constructive. Not that there aren't, you know, things that go on and some crazy stuff, but generally it's just so positive and feeding. If anybody wants to go to my site and look at some of the comments on different articles, you'll see tremendous people extrapolating the ideas and adding wonderful dimensions to the original thought of whatever the article was about. And it's so gratifying, like you're saying. And what happens then is as that vibe gets better and better, the shills stick out like a sore thumb. And people just call them out right on the spot. Not in a vindictive or vicious way. They just go, what are you doing here? Why are you here? If you don't like this stuff, why are you reading it? Or why you say you're reading it? You don't have to, like, we'll see you later. And if I didn't notice it, you know, we monitor it pretty carefully. But, you know, we sleep sometimes and things like that. But they'll drop me a note, say, hey, have you checked this guy out? I think something's weird. And sure enough, you know, we'll kind of work together to kind of ferret out what's going on. But yeah, it's gratifying, isn't it, man? When people get it and they build on it and they take it and run with it. And that's how I've gotten a lot of my contributors, actually. People who have written these really cogent responses and some brilliant analyses or you know, mini treatises of how they're seeing things, I'll write them and say, hey man, that's great, why don't you expand that and make an article and I'll put it up. And some of these people have their own websites, blogs now, and are really, you know, they're up and running writers just by a little bit of encouragement. And that's really gratifying. But you're having that effect, man. You don't see it. You're going to hear a little bit about it, but you're putting it out there. But it's, you know, you deserve to hear back. You know, I hope people are giving you that feedback and saying how much you're helping them, and you know, your attitude, your sense of humor, and in spite of all this, you know, what should be gloom and doom and all the insanity that we witness every day, you know, people like you make a real big difference, brother.
Oh. I know. I get emails every now and again from people. Either they've been living with their family who they're starting to hate because every time they open their mouth, they get called a conspiracy theorist and get offered a tinfoil hat to be made for them or something. It's just like, and they're like, Vinny, you know, you helped me to laugh and see the funny side of being a social outcast misfit who everybody hates, and I feel great.
When I first heard your byline, the lighter side of genocide, that made me laugh out loud, man. That was so clever. The lighter side of genocide. It's like, what? Did those really go together? But that's very Zen, man. You know, that's how Zen teachers work. You know, these guys, they'll answer you in a seemingly nonsensical answer to get your old way of thinking just trapped in a box and blown up, because it's the way people approach things they're never going to get the right answer with those kind of, you know, rational, hyper-rational expectations of getting things answered according to their old paradigm. It ain't going to work. Just like the revolution that people are hoping to see in the world, well, it will not happen from the same level of consciousness that created the old one, as Einstein famously said. You know, people have got to wake up first and really, you know, get it, really know that. And they'll know when they get there. If you don't know you've gotten there, you haven't gotten there. That's how it is. It's a little cryptic, but it's not that hard to understand. But anybody who's gotten it will know exactly what that means. And that's where this conscious awakening is, to me, the most integral part of the, I don't know, I don't even like to call it the alternative movement anymore, because it's turned into this sort of incestuous relationship that, you know, there's a lot more infighting and stuff. But
I was going to mention that, actually. Yeah. I was about to say those exact words, and then you just said it before I could. And this reminds me of a discussion Suzanne Posel and I had on the United We Strike marathon just a day or two ago about, is the truth movement policing itself effectively? Okay, so if somebody who's actually a freaking government agent, and somebody's got the documents, like they've got a fax that they sent to the FBI or something, complaining about being exposed, is the truth movement correctly policing itself? Are we exposing false flag terrorism as well and as quickly and as definitively as we are exposing agents within our midst? Or is it merely lending itself to crazed paranoia, where you basically just call everybody a shill, more or less, and there's a lot of that, and it seems that the more of a scumbag you actually are in this movement and try to tear down other people, the larger your audience becomes up to a certain point. And then people start to recognize that you don't actually have anything to add. You're only there to destroy. You're only there to infight. You're not there to encourage people. You're not there to inform people. You're not there to help people. And sometimes it takes a long, long period of time to pass listening to a radio show host before you will start to realize that they're just trying to make you afraid. They're trying to make you dumb. They're trying to keep you listening by giving you what you want to hear. Now, I will talk about all sorts of stuff that people don't want to hear. I got, you know how people on Facebook, they got like 5,000 friends or whatever, and it's like impossible to add them as a friend because because they're already full up. Well, I find that I get people deleting me and unfriending me multiple times per day because of the fact that I do talk about virtually any topic you can possibly think of, and you're bound to offend somebody. And I hope that I have offended them, because ultimately, if you are in the media and your goal is to inform people, you must offend people sometimes, right? Because their fragile sensibilities are the thing that has kept them from accepting or even researching the truth themselves for a long time. And if at one point they defriend me or write an abusive comment and I block them or whatever, maybe somewhere down the line, that person will realize, oh my God, I was a completely arrogant douchebag, and I didn't know what the hell I was talking about. Vinny was right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I look at it, I have sort of a litmus test. If somebody gets ticked off at somebody because of one certain thing that they've taught or have proposed as, you know, as part of their theory of everything, I guess, like take David Icke and somebody, and people immediately go, oh, the reptilian guy, you know, and they dump his world of amazing research because of some kind of assertion they don't even understand about something of a reptilian nature in the fabric of this world, which we hardly understand. And the people who pick up on one little thing, oh no, I don't like him because of this, or I don't like him because of that. That is a lower level vibration. It's not coming from a place of understanding or awake consciousness. And I don't take them seriously. Those are the people that get all niggled out about, start criticizing. They're the ones that friend, unfriend, and this kind of stuff. And I don't pay much attention to them. They're not there yet. They're not in a conscious place. And like you said, eventually when they get there, they're going to go, oh man, was I absolutely out of it? I had no idea. And when they come to their senses, they mellow out. And I was telling somebody today about a rule I use for myself. It's something of a metaphor, but we process a lot of information, all of us. It comes at us fast, and we all have a hunger to learn. We want the big picture. We want to connect dots. And I give information something I call the spaghetti test. It's like a rule to me, but when you make spaghetti, you throw it against the wall. If it's ready, it sticks. And if it's not, it's going to bounce off the wall. And as you go through information, which there's a world and undiscovered worlds of information, I throw it up against the wall and see if it sticks. Some stuff bounces right off. Some sticks and stays for a while. Maybe after 2 weeks, it falls off. Or I've got a whole area covered with spaghetti, and all of a sudden, my attention switches over to a different, rabbit hole. And I'm throwing spaghetti over there. In my mind, I've got probably a meter thick of spaghetti in my head all over the room of stuff that I've sort of just thrown out there and just see what sticks and what doesn't. And we can't get fixated on things. It's a moving, we don't really understand very much at all. And the more you understand, the more you realize you don't know and you don't understand. So people get hung up on one little fact, one little aspect, one little, something that somebody said or the way they said it. It's really looking from a really small-minded attitude, and it's really not worth taking very seriously. But it can be a real pain in the neck and in the neck if they get really vocal about it and start making a mess. But that's when I've got a moderation button, that comes through. And if it's just causing chaos and confusion and contention, I delete it. I send it to trash, and I don't have to do that very often because if the vibration level is kept high enough in the comments and the whole general vibration, it doesn't happen that often. But when they show up, man, they stick out. But they're, like you said, they're all over the place. There is a bit of inbreeding that's going on, and that's why I think the solution is that people need to reach out. We've got to broaden the audience. If we have a message that needs to get out, it's like this thing going on inside the 9/11 truth movement, whether it was Judy Woods stuff, whether, it was a directed energy or were there planes or not planes, and was it atom bombs, was it thermite, all that kind of stuff. It's a distraction from the point that, it's interesting and all that, but the point is to get the message out that this was not done in the way that the narrative was told us it was done, which the narrative, which doesn't, not hardly an aspect of their official narrative holds up at all. That's the point. And when it gets off that point, well, then you can start looking for the shills. Who's pushing this other stuff? Who's causing this contention? What's the big deal about whether there was planes or not planes, and what kind of exotic technology they used? Sure, it's interesting, but in some ways it's important. But the real aspect is exposing the agenda, and you can take that to any one of these. The Fukushima issue, when those divisions start to happen, this sort of inbreeding is going on. And wait a minute. We need to move this out to get the initial fundamental message out to people who need to hear it. Let's get off this, feeding frenzy on confusion and infighting.
It's also the element of, I don't know, infection to a degree. I'm not sure if that's the right word, but if I engage with somebody who's being abusive to me and I try to convince them otherwise, like they say, Vinny, you're a shill, Vinny, you're a liar, Vinny, you're just doing it for the money. My last paycheck was like $11,900 before I quit working altogether and became a broke-ass activist. So if I was doing it for the money, I'm probably going about it in the direct opposite way that I should, which would mean I'm really, really dumb. And I don't sound ridiculously stupid, do I? Maybe it's the New Zealand accent thing. I don't know.
Hey, if you could tell people, hey, if I was making any money, you'd be doing it too. If this was making money, everybody'd be doing it. I'm not seeing a whole lot of people doing it.
Well, what happened was,
and the big megaphones, the big guys who are actually raking in the dough, were those are the ones. Now you find the fear mongers, and that's where you'll find the sensationalists, and you're going to find people telling the party line and feeding off the mass mind.
Yeah,
that's these guys are making the mega bucks. It's not because their message is necessarily true. They're just pushing buttons and pulling triggers. And
yeah,
that's another sign. I don't trust you. I mean, these people have come out of nowhere, and all of a sudden they show up and they get 50 million hits, and they're so called popular in the alternative media. And all of a sudden they're on Huffington Post, and they're moving into this whole next level of I don't mean to diss these people, but the Zeitgeist movement really did this. They just came on the scene and went great guns and wham, and now they're this massive movement. And there's truth to it, I'm sure, but yeah, my alarm bells go off. I go, wait a minute here, who's supporting this? And how? Because normally for us guys, they suppress our numbers on YouTube. If you got something that's going hot, they'll repress the numbers. But maybe your real hits are around 50 or 100. 200, 500,000 hits. It's going viral. Well, they're going to push it down to about 20,000, 15,000. It's a normal, and Google does the same thing. They drop it down with their algorithms so that it doesn't even show up. Or if it does, it shows up way down the list. It's being manipulated. So, and people who get past this, it's like someone who shows up in the mainstream media getting all this coverage. Then you start, well, wait a minute. It might seem to be a cynical attitude, but what's the deal here? Why are they pushing this, whereas they're suppressing so much good information that is sound, that we know is sound? And we have to have that attitude. We have to be thinking in those lines. It's not a rule, but as it can be pretty reliable.
I've got this question as well. I mean, how much interaction? How much interaction you have with these people determines how sane you are. Let's say I had one guy who's like a member of an organization that I support, and he's in fact the president of that organization, and I know him, I've met him, and yet he can't help but literally sit there on Facebook all day, every day, mentioning me in comments, giving me a crap, being condescending, and just basically being a douchebag to me. And I resisted blocking him for a long time because I normally don't block people if I know them, unless I know them to be a very bad person. And then this wave of calm came over me, where I was sick of seeing, oh, this guy mentioned you in a comment, and sick of going in there and just being belittled. And being made to feel like an idiot for no good reason. And it was just block, and the scum is gone. And suddenly my life feels better. It's like a great weight has been lifted. Because you can't argue or reason with somebody who has abandoned reason. Okay? It's like, what was it Thomas Paine said? It's like applying medicine to the dead.
Mm. Yeah, that's so true. It's so true. I mean, differences will happen. I've had differences with people I was very close to, and something arose, and it reached the point of very few people, but it got to a point it's not worth pursuing anymore because something was wrong with the relationship. It was just when you find things like you said earlier, when it has that energy sapping effect on you, well, that's really all you need to know. You don't need to wrestle with it and necessarily reconcile it and make things right. Making things right in many cases is just walking away, getting away from it. Like television, you can't fix the crappy advertising or the crappy programming. You turn it off. People try to keep writing like they do in politics. Keep writing these guys. Change the program. Change the representative. We got elections. Let's put in a new person. It's like the television. Just turn the damn thing off. It's pointless because the whole system's rigged. And it's often that way with relationships. And it's not easy. I'll tell you, there's a lot of people waking up, and marriages are breaking up. people are losing their jobs. Anybody with worth their salt that's really stood up, who were inside the system and they started speaking up about or asking questions in their let's say they're in an engineering business and they're asking questions about 9/11. Well, they got their walking papers pretty quick if that company was somehow involved. And they've had a rough life ever since, trying to find work, raising their kids. But, you know, these are the people that are making the difference. These are the people that, for which, you know, we who deserve our utmost respect, who've stepped out and paid that price. But once you're in the groove, like you and I and so many people, it's nothing. I mean, we're unstoppable because we can't stop doing what we do, whatever comes along. And if people tap into that, man, there's such an energy source they wouldn't believe. And the money will show up. It'll show up. The support lines will show up. People have so much fear. They've been, you know, which is understandable. They've been indoctrinated with this whole scarcity lie since they were born. But you know, like the famous analogy, look at the birds. You know, they don't have jobs. They just go out and get food when they need it, and then they build their nests and they do what they do. And they're not worried about it. And and there's plenty for everybody. The overpopulation thing is a myth. That there's not enough food is a myth. That there's not enough land is a myth. I mean, there's so many big fat lies out there that people that are controlling people's overall paradigm. It's pathetic.
I remember
as they start to wake up, man, then they go, "Holy cow! I was scammed, and I can be happy."
Mm. There's a comedian in Australia called Stephen Hughes, and he goes, "I don't want to work or get a job. They can get screwed. All right. Why do I need a job? Everything's freaking built. All right. You know, if you got a roof over your head? Yeah. You got a toilet? Yeah. You got a kitchen? Yeah. Then sit down and freaking evolve." Well, what am I going to do, man? I'll get bored. What? I don't get bored at all. Just go to the window. Look. Bird. Cheep. He goes, but I'll get bored. You know, I don't have anything to do. Well, why don't you drive a bus then? You know, hey, you can fucking come and pick me up.
That's the thing. People don't even know what they say. Well, find your passion. Do your passion. Do what you love to do. You know, a lot of people, they want to make a lot of money so they can finally do what they want to do. Be an artist. Be this or that. But other people say, well, do your passion, and everything will fall into place. But what's even more pathetic is people have not even gotten in touch with their passion. They haven't found it yet. You know, they haven't put themselves in motion yet to get away from the shore and get the bigger picture, get back off the shore and look back and go at the contour of their life and go, well, who am I? What do I love to do? And because it's so often not at all what we thought.
I was one time interviewing
that expression says that. The rudder can't take effect until the boat's in motion. Well, so many people are sitting on the shore wondering where to go. Well, push off. The rudder will take effect, you know.
Mm. Well, I was interviewing somebody who's like a psychiatrist, right? And one of the questions she asks her clients is, what makes you happy? And the majority of the time, the patient will burst into tears because they don't know. They haven't known for decades and decades what makes them happy. They think that living their life the way other people tell them to live it is what's going to be good for them. But the reality is, telling everybody else to F off is what's going to be good for you. Okay? You, an individual, have all your unique abilities, all your unique experiences, and let's face facts here. Unless somebody else has all your abilities and all your experiences, they can't make your life decisions for you. And you'd be very unwise to take everybody else's word for it and never figure out things for yourself. I mean, what are you trying to gain here? I mean, were you born into somebody else's shoes, you know? Are you like some kind of hereditary dictator? Oh, I have to be the ruler of the realm, you know? It's just my lot in life.
Yeah, it's really sad. People, it's been conditioned out of them. so that, like you said, their response is going to be to burst into tears. They don't know what they want. They've been taught, you know, like that famous saying, whoever dies with the most toys wins. They keep working and working and working until this elusive thing called happiness, having enough and having the vacation home and having the boat and the car and the jewelry and, you know, fame and a reputation, and there is more unhappy than they were than when they started. It's all about getting in touch. It's all about that conscious awakening. And then people realize all you really have is now, and it's always now, and the rest of it is illusion. It's that past people are trying to fix up, and the future people are trying to live for. It's illusion. It's only as real as people make it. If you live in the past, okay, you can have it. You're going to live in it, and it's going to swamp your life. And if you're going to live for the future, okay, fine, but you're going to miss now. And the future you're going to have is going to be missing the most important ingredient, and that's you living in the now, which that's at the point people realize their gifts and their true self. But it's very sad. The system programming has been so strong. But the cool thing is, people snap out of it. You know, if something happens, they just go, I can't stand this anymore. I'm out of here.
Usually when you hit rock bottom.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's why now I've written about this before. It's this whole collapse is backfiring on these engineers, because people are losing everything, and they're going, wait a minute, I didn't even need all that, and I actually feel better. I like this. You know, and whatever they have left, they whittle it down. They got all this junk in storage I've never used. They got to sell it anyway. And the more stuff they get rid of, they go, oh, this feels wonderful. You know, honey, we're finally free. Let's go live that place we've always wanted to live. And, you know, we have a little bit of something left. Let's go do what we've been planning to do. But we got stuck on this treadmill. And now let's just go do it. We're free. We got rid of all of our baggage.
We can finally move to Delaware.
Timbuk 4.
The sequel.
Yeah.
But what the buck for is the question. It's sort of like carving your own path through life, right? It's actually a lot easier once you realize that nobody else can tell you what to do and you have to figure it out yourself. It's kind of like nobody can ride a bicycle for you. You have to learn how to ride it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, it's totally true. it life has a way of bringing you around, you know. It happens. I mean, it's like activism. You know, people get brought into it via various channels. Like, we put up a post recently. This woman had this amazing near-death experience. She actually contacted me by email because she'd read something on the site and she was really inspired by it. And she said, oh, by the way, I did a presentation. It's not very good. I get really nervous. She's real self-effacing. But she sent it to me, and I posted it, and it's just breathtaking. What happened to this middle-class American, you know, raised in the strict Christian paradigm, had a near-death experience, and she tells the whole story. Mind-blowing. And she wanted to stay, one of those stories, but she got escorted and encouraged to come back. And what happened to her life afterwards? And the way she describes it, and she came from this middle class, you know, just one of those total pop outs that and she explains she couldn't go to church anymore. Then she had to explain why she couldn't go to church to all these people and all the flack she got. And then plus this, and she doesn't, you know, the whole God paradigm completely changed for her. You know, I didn't see these things that you thought I should, but this is what happened to me. But the change in her life, and now she speaks, and her life is completely turned around. It's like Jill Bolte Taylor. Remember the one who had her brain shut down, the brain scientist?
Oh, yeah, I remember that one. Remember?
Yeah, and now she speaks about consciousness, and she was a brain scientist. But now her passion is talking about, wow, we're missing it here. You know, that experience woke me up to the amazing potential of human creativity and our infinite spirit and our connectivity to everything. You know, and you could call her a space case, but you know, this is one brilliant woman, and she articulates it amazing. People can find it on TED. There's other ones too.
The general rule I've found is almost like the worst thing that happens to you, the more you can grow from it. It's not like a you will grow from it. It's a potential. Some people give up, and I think it's that hopelessness, that that unwillingness to go on and keep trying and keep trying, that destroys people in the end. It's always yourself that destroys you. It's rarely somebody else. The other people can destroy your life, but temporarily. You are the only mm-hmm. one who can ensure that it permanently gets destroyed.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We're infinite power, as the expression goes, and people have got to realize that they can take control at any time of everything, and that's all they really have. Like somebody was asking on another show, like, well, what about this awakening, and what do you think is going to happen to the world? Are we going to make it through, and is everything going to be okay, and what's going to happen? And I said, well, this is going to shock you, but it doesn't matter. What's going to happen? What matters is you do everything you need to do, and like the expression, don't be attached to the outcome. Like, yes, we'd love to see a changed paradigm. We'd love to see a new world, but it's your world that you have to worry about. You got to change your world, and help change the world of the people around you. But if you try to carry the whole world on your shoulders, or you're looking for this monstrous big change on the outside, which of course, yes, we'd all like to see. The real dynamic at work here is people doing that, having that transfiguration of their own, and joining into this activated wave of vibrational awakening, whatever you want to call it. It's like going along the lines of how people awaken it. And they're often touched individually. Look. There's some moms, that their child was murdered by vaccines. Or we have one of our grandchildren, very severely autistic, and it went for a hospital procedure when it was just days old, and they will not disclose what they gave to that child. And we're convinced that they gave her a bunch of vaccines and some kind of treatment, and they won't disclose what they did. But she's as severely autistic as you can be. And it gets people, this wakes people up. Or now in the States, I guess you've heard that they're accusing the mother of shaken baby syndrome, arresting the mother when actually it was the vaccine that murdered the child. They're trying to reverse it, cover up these horrific things. Well, these people turn into activists. The people who lost a loved one to cancer due to GMOs, they say that's it, and their life becomes one of passion of rectifying what this problem is, so it won't happen to anybody else. And these things are happening, so it is backfiring on these matrix engineers, but it comes with a cost. But it comes down to that personal awakening and taking power. And as people do, they realize, holy cow, where have I been? This is the person I always knew I could have been. This is the person that I know I am inside, and it took this to bring it out. And now I'm acting like the real person. I'm not trying to fulfill a role. I'm not trying to act like my parents taught me or what I learned in school or what I saw on television. I'm finally me. And I'm acting out of passion and love and spontaneity. And they go, I like myself like this, even though the context can be very trying when it comes to trying to affect change. But heck, that's what we're all here for.
Well, the alternative is being willing slave scum. The elite kind of have this sort of machine man sort of perspective of the world and humanity, right? Like we're basically just animals. And I was interviewing Cliff High the other day, and I gave him the analogy of humanity being like a shock absorber. Okay, you can compress it, but the more you compress it, the more pressure it tries to exude the other way and to force your hands apart, right?
That's right.
And he says no. You're still buying into the mechanical mindset. It's actually more like a spring of water. You know what happens when you try to push water down? It starts spurting all around the edges and going in different directions and things that you can't predict, and carving whole different paths through rock and so on and so forth. And I thought, man, that's absolutely incredible, because that's exactly how activists are formed. They get suppressed, somebody tries to push them down, and they shoot off in all these other directions and cannot be stopped.
Yeah, that's why they call them, hey, you little squirt. No, it's the truth, man. It's the truth. That's the cool thing, that dynamism. That's why I say the awakening can't be stopped. And it doesn't mean, and it's kind of a conundrum, because nothing can stop the awakening. Some people might sit back on their hands and go, okay, fine, it's going to happen anyway. What do you need me for? No. It doesn't work that way. It's beyond the mental mindset. It's beyond this reason paradigm. You are part of that dynamic. And once you know about it, and once it's activated in you, you are responsible to be part of it and to help perpetuate it. You don't just sit back and it happens all by itself. But it's almost like a Zen cone. It doesn't have an answer that satisfies your mind. But those dynamics are very real. And anybody who's experienced it knows exactly what I'm talking about.
Yeah, man. I remember one time I had a cone and I felt much more zen.
ice cream cone.
If you say so.
Yeah, how cool. Yeah. Oh, I need to listen to your interview with Cliff. He's dynamite, man.
Well, he really is. It's kind of like explosive. What I'm starting to really, really kind of get in terms of my place in the universe now is that I'm kind of like an island. I'm sort of by myself, but people can swim to me if they want. They can fly over me if they want. And ultimately, I'm the home of an entire ecosystem, just like any other island. Doesn't matter how separate I think I am from the rest of the world, I'm still part of it.
Yeah, interesting. You're in New Zealand.
New Zealand.
Get the news at New Zealand.
You know, to be honest, being from a country with 40 million sheep and 4 million people sometimes feels like there's just 44 million sheep.
we visited there. What a beautiful place. It was on a cruise or some trip that was gifted to us. And they kept wanting to take us to sheep farms. So we finally had to say, that's enough. That's enough. If we see another sheep being shorn or another sheep farm, you know, please, you know. It was quite funny. But what a beautiful place. My goodness. So sorry about your government takeover. You and Australia and Canada, man, are going as fast as the U.S. and England.
Oh, bro. They've really pulled the wool over our eyes.
Yeah. Talk about it. Woolly bully. It's sad.
I'm kind of getting sick of it to a degree. It's almost like I throw my TV out, right? And despite the fact that I'm no longer plugged into any kind of mainstream media, it still appears on the Facebook feeds. It still appears everywhere. And people are still watching it. Even people in the truth movement are still watching television, still watching the mainstream news. And I find the irony of it to be thus. Your goal is to get good information and or expose bad information. And apparently the way you're going about that is by watching weaponized propaganda.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, that's well said. Yeah, I don't get it either. There's a lot of people, and they'll quote the latest episode of something or other. I say, what? What are you doing watching that? Like, what's... don't you get it yet? You know, well, I'm just keeping an eye on the news, you know, or something. It's like
you can go, bro, what do you hope
you
to gain?
You can check the headlines in 5 minutes of what these bullcrappers are saying, but better yet, you can find synopses on good new alternative news sites, and you'll find the news that really needs to take to keep your finger on the pulse. But then, yeah, it's like you said, it's weaponized information. It's so polluting. People don't realize how dangerous, even so-called awake alternative people, they do not realize how dangerous it is. Like, I try to avoid looking at billboards when I'm going down the road. This stuff is just, it's built to screw with your mind. The way things work. Some friends here down here that just appeared by Skype on the Free Your Mind conference, they did a piece on mnemonics. Showing how these swirling circles and these graphics that they use for screen sweeps between shots, especially on the sports shows, all this stuff is hypnotic entrancement, and it's a brilliant. It'll be up on my site tomorrow, but it's a brilliant expose of how this type of mind control. And people sit there and they'll watch it and just think, "Well, I get it because I know this is mind control." Yeah, but you're watching it. It's like saying, "Oh, I know this is poison," and then taking a big glass of it.
Yeah,
I don't get it. You know, it's. I thought you understood this, and that's the thing. We can say we know, but if we don't do, we don't know.
Knowledge without action is nothing, right? Yeah. I've always found that to be absolutely true. Doesn't matter how well I think that I understand something, I don't know anything unless I've done it for myself. And this is the way people are, but they don't realize that they don't know what the hell they're talking about until it happens to them. Right? Like, what was it? I was asking for this new computer, right? And somebody is saying, "Oh, you don't need that computer to make those videos and such and blah blah blah." And I go, "Really? Are you a video editor, are you?" And he's like, "Yeah, yeah, I'm qualified. So how many videos have you made, bro?" "I've made one." "Really? Okay. I've made 3,000. So out of the two of us, who do you think has more expertise in video editing and knowing what the hell they're talking about and which kind of equipment that they need?" He's like, well, you're just being arrogant.
the old arrogant defense.
I know what I'm talking about, and you don't. Therefore, I'm arrogant, and you're totally spot on, bro. That's some good philosophy there.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes I don't know. I feel like a cat coughing up a hairball. You know, like somebody makes these rubbish comments, like.
That's the thing. Ignorance doesn't know it's ignorant, so it flaunts it. It revels in it. It feeds on it. The unawakened don't know they're not awake. So they accuse the awakened of making stuff up and talking through their hats, and you know we have to deal with these levels of conscious awareness, and we have to deal with them wisely because like your encounter there, so many of these people are just they're not worth encountering. I mean we should be loving and kind and try to help those that are helpable, but in most cases people they're not going to get it until they get it. And that's why I just love the internet platform, because if you put out your information and, you know, through writing, through videos, through, you know, sharing articles and blending certain information together, and people start taking a look at it, or it's presented in such a way somebody goes, now my mom will watch that one. I've been trying to get through to her about 9/11. That one's perfect. Or that's well said, you know. Maybe she'll listen this time. You know, and it's slowly... You know, it's like the water analogy again. It leaks and it slowly has its effect. You know, like the persistence of drops of water will eventually put a hole in a stone.
Now you're talking about levels there, right? Like levels of awareness. And I'm wondering, can you actually gauge intelligence? Like, what level of stupidity do you have before you're so stupid that you have no idea how stupid you are?
Maybe you should be color coded or like a litmus paper, see what color people turn. the ignorance and awareness rainbow. Well, you came in on a point too, Johnny. I think we have some work to do here.
No, but what's problematic, bro, is that you actually have people who I deeply respect, you know, in a lot of cases, because they've got an incredible boatload of information on this one particular topic or whatever, and you foolishly assume that they're pretty well knowledgeable about everything, but then you start to realize that they deny 9/11's an inside job, they deny vaccines are dangerous, they deny that chemtrails exist, and yet they're incredibly ahead of the field with natural medicine or political corruption, and actually write books about it or any of this, and they're just so blindsided. So it's not so much about intelligence, is it?
Not
intellectual intelligence. There's other forms of intelligence which people aren't really aware of, because they. IQ tests are the only things that people really can think of in a way to test people's intelligence. But there's spatial awareness, emotional intelligence, being able to read people's faces. And I think maybe sometimes we pigeonhole ourselves in a corner for so long that corner is the only thing we can see. And anybody who comes into it is an interloper.
Yeah, it becomes a defense mechanism. Their egos, they hang their ego on it, and the whole thing. And the more they know, the more they think they know, and the more they can defend it, and the more it supports their little support mechanism. But we were just talking about that, you know, how these people with degrees after their names are wearing a white lab coat, and people just bow. You know, I am Dr. So-and-so. I have a degree in this kind of medicine, and I'm here to irradiate you. Oh, yes, doctor. I must need it. And also, you need to take these pills. Yes, doctor. And the submission to authority, just based on symbols, or like you're saying, quantity of information. Well, I know all this history, and I've written all these history books. And people get overwhelmed and so impressed by it. But it's such bunkum. Have you ever heard the thing about degrees, you know, a BS, an MS, and a PhD? Do you know that one?
No.
Can you swear on the show or no?
No.
No? Okay, so a BS is...
We all know what BS is.
Okay. MS is more S, and the PhD is piled higher and deeper.
That is kind of it. It's sort of like you're being programmed. All right, and that's basically all that it is. It's an indoctrination program that gets you by hook or by crook. Whether the school system gets you, the television gets you, or your higher education gets you, or your own arrogance and your abilities gets you. One way or another, all of us have been brainwashed at some point in our lives to believe something that wasn't true. And I come up with a great joke. Zen, do you know how you know if you're under mind control? If you've never questioned whether or not you're under mind control.
that's a truism there, brother. That's a truism. Yeah, I know. And you know, there's symptoms. If I'm conversing with or I'm watching people into the so-called truth movement and they got no sense of humor, they go way down on my meter. It's like,
oh yeah,
something's missing here, man, because... This whole thing's a joke. You got to get it. You know, this is almost a spoof. You know, it's funny how people act. It's funny how people can look so arrogant when they've got nothing inside, and they put up these baloney fronts. You know, even the policemen and all that. There's a place in consciousness where you can stand back and go, how silly do you look? You know, how stupid are these elites? Or look at these jerkwads that, you know, that parade around in these fat suits like Kissinger and Rockefeller and these weird balls like Brzezinski. Like, are you kidding me? You walk around in public looking like that and saying these things? You know, who's kidding who, brother? You know, or Hillary Clinton running for president. Are you joking? And maybe against another Bush. What? Is this a scam? And people are talking about it seriously, like it's got some merit or some value. And it's just, oh my goodness, this is a insane asylum run by even more insane people. It's just nuts. But anyway, sense of humor I think is really important, and people not taking themselves too seriously, because let's face it, none of us know very much. We're just scratching the surface and starting to get the idea of what's going on here.
Yeah, the man who thinks he knows everything clearly knows bugger all. the guy who thinks he knows bugger all probably knows enough.
He probably works for Fox News.
Yeah, or something that is a near rhyme with Fox News. Who happened to fox you every single day, or outfox you, depending on the thing. In fact, have you seen that documentary, Outfox, the Rupert Murdoch's war on news? I just find it really incredible.
How
incredibly powerful the news is at shaping our perception of reality, shaping our perception even of ourselves and those around us, with programming that is based on complete and utter fabrication, distortion, and at the very least some form of scumbaggery. My very special guest has been Zen Gardner, ladies and gentlemen. I recommend you Google up his work, because ultimately he does like to have a laugh, he does like to have a few quips and everything, and he doesn't take himself too frickin' seriously, and neither should any of us do so. don't take yourself too seriously, and don't take what people say about you personally. Thank you for listening to The Vinnie Eastwood Show, and we will see you again sometime, folks.